Hi, Paul.
Hi, Debbie. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Well, as I think Susan may have told you, I absolutely love Stop Time. It is exquisite. There is a quiet elegance to it. Watching the film, it reminds me of ballet. It mirrors it. Just on every level, your use of color. I love that it's shot in black and white, so we really see shades of gray that metaphorically speak to the emotion. And then when you slowly do introduce color, or we have color in the home movies, that is so key and so poignant. I am just in love with this film, Paul.
Oh, thank you, Debbie. That's so great to hear. You're the first, like, person from your side of the business that I've gotten a reaction from, because literally no one has seen it. I mean, other than, like, the cast and a handful of friends.
Well, everybody is in for a treat when they see this
you.
One, It Dances with Films. Now, I'm curious, because I know you had done a short, 44 minutes. I don't consider 44 minutes shorts. I think they're mini movies, but you did expand it into a feature length. What was the impetus for this story?
All right. So, for the short version or the full version?
For both. Since this one arises from that.
What happened was, I made a feature called The Season's Four Love Stories. Mm-hmm. Which went out kind of 2022 going into 2023. And it was right at the beginning of its festival trip that my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. And that was February of 2023. And so, like, I dropped everything, and we spent the next 8 months of me just basically taking care of her through chemo and surgery and radiation and the whole thing. To cut to the end of that story, she's now completely fine. But it was a very serious, dark period of time. And when I emerged from that, I found that I had kind of been her cheerleader and her, you know, everything's going to be fine. And I was like the positive force that I had a kind of letdown, and I got very depressed, and I was unable to write. And I would sit in front of the computer thinking, you know, you got to write something. And like the blank screen went nowhere. And then in about February or March of 2024, Nelson, who plays the lead in this, who's a colleague of mine at the Actors Studio, called me up and said, whatever happened to that idea you had about a photographer? And I had indeed had an idea about a story involving a photographer. It was a completely different idea that I had mentioned to him, you know, 18 months prior to that or a year prior to that, that I kind of just like put it in the notebook and forgot about. And I thought, okay, you know, Nelson's talking to me, I got to do something. And I sat down and wrote the entire 44-minute version in about 2 weeks. And that was all of the scenes that involve Peter. So if you extract Adriana's story, the whole story about her being adopted and the grandmother, just take that out. That was the 44-minute version. And we filmed that in May of 2024. And I did the editing work over the summer. And then I did a cast screening, you know, kind of, oh, let's, you know, go see the film and go get a drink afterwards. And so they were all there. And at the screening, at the party afterwards, Nelson's wife came up to me and said, you know, I'm really interested, what's Adriana's story? Because she has that line where she says, you and I both have histories. Some of yours is sad, mine too.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rachel, the impetus was that Rachel saying, what's Adriana's story?
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, if I can come up with a storyline for her, this could be a feature film. And the trick was finding a storyline that was not so overwhelmingly sad that she wouldn't go out that night, because it all has to happen within 20, it all has to be set within the same 24-hour period in order to conform with the existing film about Nelson, which is about Peter, which is 24 hours. And so I tried various different things, and then the story that I came up with felt that it had the proper weight to show that she has something that she's dealing with, but not so much that she couldn't overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of how the mosaic got put together.
Wow. What a journey for this story.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful journey. I mean, number one, your wife is now fine and healthy, which is the best thing as part of the mosaic here. But I love how you had the core story with Peter and then Adriana. And the minute I heard that line about the sadness, it's like you want to know more about Adriana and her past. And I love the route that you took with the idea of being adopted, coming from Poland, and then adding so much gravitas to that, and joy was casting Patty McCormick as Grandma.
Oh yeah, that was a real godsend. She's amazing.
Oh my, I love Patty. I've interviewed her a few times, typically at TCM Film Festival. She's still going strong. She is a kick in the butt, man.
Yeah, she just turned 80.
It's hard to believe. Hard to believe.
I know. And she's this little fragile bird of a person.
Yes.
You know, but she was, you know, with older actors, I've made a few films with, you know, I made one film a few years ago with an actor in his mid-90s. And there's always, you know, are they going to be on the text? 100%. Completely solid textually. She was perfect.
Yeah. Now, once you had this all put together, you had your 44 minutes. What was your shooting process from a production standpoint? Because your cinematography is truly beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
I love, as I mentioned, the use of color that washed out that kind of seafoam green, a red balloon, the yellow of the sun and the sky in the old home movies. Just visually, it is very elegant. In addition to the story being exquisite.
The concept was, I have a personal interest in black and white photography as a still photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the images that are Peter's, you know, in his gallery show, those are all photographs of mine. So I came in and that I had made, you know, in years before actually making this film. They were just sort of sitting in my catalog. And I had this idea that, you know, Peter is a black and white photographer. So that was sort of part of the reason for choosing to shoot it in black and white, but also that Peter is living in black and white because of his sadness.
Mm-hmm.
And the color only appears when he's remembering when his wife was alive.
Yeah.
So the dream that opens it, when he sees her, or mistakes the person who he sees on the streets of Brooklyn and suddenly imagines that he's seeing Marin, the home movies, and then the final sequence, which is another dream. And then the idea of once he and Tara connect in that final scene, that his world bleeds gradually from black and white into color.
Mm-hmm.
That he is emerging from the black and white. That was, you know, the conceit of it, the idea of it. I happen to love black and white. Some of my absolute favorite movies are black and white, in not just, you know, the great vintage black and white movies, but like a movie like Ida, the Polish movie, is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And it's in gorgeous black and white. It's the same, I can't remember his name, but it's the same cinematographer who did Hamnes, Lukasz something or other.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, that was kind of the motivation behind it, that I, you know, the black and white isn't just an aesthetic choice, it's a motivated choice.
I'm like you, I love black and white film. I always have. Because there is so much richness in the shades of gray and the contrast that you
right.
get. And it's so metaphoric. It's so emotional. And I think you can feel a lot more as you're watching Black and White.
I agree with you. I if I could make everything in black and white, I would. I mean, it's not going to be suitable for every story, but I love it.
But you know, something that you do when you are inserting color is your gradation of it, the saturation of it. You're never just blowing us away with color.
No.
You have tints at certain areas, just a shade. And of course, in that third act, where there is Peter and there's Marin, he's still in black and white, and she's getting a slow tint of color to her with her blonde hair.
Right.
And I just love the delicacy of your use of color.
Oh, thank you. By the way, the home movies of the little girl on the beach, that was actually shot on Super 8 film. With a 50-year-old Super 8 camera.
Mm-hmm. I got a couple of those.
Yeah. Well, that's why it has that look. You know, you can't really, I mean, you could try and do that digitally, but it's not.
No, definitely not the same thing. And that's what a lot of people don't realize. Just because you theoretically can replicate something today with technology, it is never quite the same.
Also, by the way, when in the first time we see Adriana, she's sitting at her kitchen table holding the photograph, and she's having like flashbacks to Poland. That was shot in Super 8 black and white.
I love when we first see the photograph that Adriana is holding, and the grain and texture. And yes, that's another gem of the Super 8 shooting in black and white.
Right. Yeah, it's very, very, very grainy. I shot it on Triag.
It works perfectly for this film, Paul.
Good.
What you also do in your editing process, you have some beautiful, beautiful superimpositions and dissolves. Two things that I wish filmmakers would use more often. I think superimpositions are a beautiful transition. They're wonderful with montages. Dissolves, you'd never lose the continuity of constantly cutting to black or something like that. So I'm curious about your visual choices there in going with that editing process.
I'm trying to remember. I mean, the one big kind of superimposition dissolve-y thing is in the gallery when they're hanging the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was thinking originally was that, and that's a combination of a lot of techniques, because the shot from behind him where we see the gallery assistants actually hanging the pictures as he's telling them what to do, that's a time lapse.
Yes.
So it's about, probably altogether, it's probably about 45 or 50 seconds of film that we shot over a period of 15 minutes, and the camera took a frame every second.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has that kind of, you know, that time-lapse-y look. So that sort of is already a little bit disorienting, because it's the first time it's the only thing in the film that's in any kind of slow motion, fast motion, whatever. And then by superimposing the side shots of Peter, which are not stop time, those the idea was, we're seeing inside Peter's mind as he's hanging these pictures.
Yeah.
And then compounding that, he's doing that. Meanwhile, Adriana's getting ready. So we see her superimposed on that. Okay, now we know what she's doing, and then we come back into the gallery, and then we're at the party. So it's like it's one long visual musical passage of making the transition from him doing this thing that he's been delaying doing, which is hanging this piece, all the way to it's now the actual opening, and he's going to meet Adriana for the first time.
Yeah, it is an absolutely gorgeous sequence. And as you're talking, I'm even looking at my notes. Peter gets to the gallery. Time lapse to hang the last photo. Supers. The gallery. Adriana's dressing for the show.
Right.
It's just so standout. And so it's delicate. And that's the word I keep going
Thank
back
you.
to about this film. It, the way that you use your supers and your dissolves, it adds a delicacy.
Oh, well, that's great.
The same thing that we get with ballet. There's a delicacy when you're watching
right.
it with the tutus floating in the air and whatnot.
That's interesting. I mean, because I have a kind of substantial ballet background myself. Not at all as a dancer. My wife was a ballet dancer with American Ballet Theatre for years. And she's now one of the big ballet teachers in New York City. I was involved in the musical department of New York City Ballet. Before I started making movies,
mm-hmm.
I was a professional musician for years. And I composed two ballets for New York City Ballet, another three ballets for other companies. I've been around ballet my whole life. My mother was a ballet dancer.
Oh, my.
So it's interesting that you somehow pick up on that.
It just comes through in the visuals, in your pacing. It really, it emotionally resonates and shines through. So you definitely, ballet is in your blood, Paul. It is in your blood.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah, it is.
Got to talk to you about your sound. Oh, my goodness. Your sound design and mix is so wonderful. When Peter is at the beach with Emma at Coney Island, and we hear the surf, the wind, the birds, the kids, especially
right.
while they're talking, slightly arguing from Emma's standpoint, and then with Peter there alone, we really hear the ambient nature of life around him. It is absolutely wonderful. As we move on later in the film, as we have the dinner party at Mason's, it's absolutely gorgeous between the images and the sound and the scoring, the jazz piano playing and the piano with a little bit behind it. How did you go about developing the sound for this? Because the sound is just as critical in this one for the emotional resonance of the film.
Well, you know, one of the things they say is that sound is actually more emotional than images.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is very important. You know, like I said, I have a musical background, and I also, part of my musical background professionally was that I was a record producer for 15 years. So understanding how to shape sound in the studio is something I'm quite familiar with. And, you know, as I go through my editing process, I tend to do everything at once, meaning that as I'm putting a scene together, I'm also doing the sound design, and if there's going to be music, I'm also writing the music.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I cut, I tailor the music to the images, and sometimes I cut the images to the music. It very much depends on the scene and how that scene is supposed to work. But I kind of do whatever sound effects and ambiences there are going to be, I do while I'm actually putting the movie together in the editing process. However, the quality of the mix is entirely the hands of my post-production sound guy, whose name is Alan Douches, Douchef.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a very, very experienced engineer and producer, and somebody that I've been working with for, you know, since God knows, you know, forever. And he is responsible for how everything ultimately is smooth, clean, how much of those waves you hear and how they go in and out. That's the whole mix is his.
Yeah.
I kind of put in the sound effect, but he's responsible for the quality of it.
Yeah, the mix is absolutely beautiful, and I do love how he modulates the sounds.
Yeah.
So that nothing is overpowering.
Oh, yeah,
a wonderful, wonderful job sonically. Now, did you edit as you went along? Because first you had your 44 minutes, Then you turn this into...
Yeah, no, I... Right.
So, what was the editing process like?
No, in both cases, like the 44-minute, I edited the entire thing. Then I shot the four new scenes and then cut them into the film. So what I would do is I would take the 44-minute edit, cut at the end of the scene in the kitchen where Mason's talking to him on the phone, mm-hmm. and then I would start sticking stuff in for that first Adriana scene. And then I would have to work out both visually and from a sound point of view how they overlap.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was the way I did that.
Now, is your process to edit as you shoot or get all the footage first and then shoot?
No, I'll shoot everything then edit. I don't have time. I mean, I'm kind of a one man band. So I get everything and then I sit down. I mean, now that I think of it, because there was, particularly with the Adriana scenes, because we shot those kind of scattered, mm-hmm. like over a period of a month. We had, I don't know, five or six shooting days scattered over 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I actually began looking at Adriana's first scene before we actually finished shooting. But nothing, I mean, it was very casual at that point.
And you truly are a one-man band. Is there anything you cannot do, Paul?
Sound mixing. I let Alan do that.
You are just amazing. I mean, your background in itself just lends itself to being a one-man band and making a film.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I will say that being a record producer with the way records are made now in terms of digital technology
yeah.
is excellent training for filmmaking. Because it's a very similar process. It's you're creating bits of material, not necessarily in order, not necessarily kind of, you know, you're going to, if you have A, B, C, you might do C on day one and then B a week later. And then three months later, you have to assemble them into the right order and then fix them and connect them. It's the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found it, I think it is actually, there's a natural kind of crossover of skills.
Mm-hmm. Your work just amazes me, I have to tell you. And I love the still photography in the gallery scene. I love your still photography. And the contrast that you have with those nine final images that Peter is hanging and the other standalone images that we briefly get to see around the room. I love them. They're just gorgeous.
Thank you.
Now, I'm also very impressed with your song Gone that you wrote. Did you write that specifically for this film?
No, that's something that I just have in my hip pocket. I produced a record in the early 2000s that was never released, and they just shelved it and forgot about it, and that song is from that record.
It's beautiful. It is really...
Thank you. Yeah, it's one of my favorite things that I've done. Actually, as a song.
Well, I'm glad that you decided to use it in Stop Time.
No, it works.
It works perfectly. So how exciting is it to have Stop Time in Dances with Films New York?
Well, I'm anticipating and nervous because you just never know what's going to happen. But I've got a lot of friends coming. There's some industry people coming. I'm, you know, excited. I actually, I did a test screening of the DCP mm-hmm. yesterday at the Jacob Burns Film Center.
Mm-hmm.
In you know what that is, the Jacob Burns?
I have never been there. I have heard of it.
Okay, so it's this wonderful facility in Westchester County, just north of the city, that has five theaters, and they show a very, very highly curated program of films, and they have, you know, these five theaters are absolutely gorgeous. They're in, you know, the equipment is immaculate, the sound is immaculate, the seats are like you're in a screening room at MGM. I mean, it's just, you know, it's fantastic. And I was able to get in there to see it, and what was so wonderful was to finally see the film on a big screen with you know, cinema quality surround sound,
mm-hmm.
and that's the part that for me is most exciting is to show the film in a room, in a big room full of people,
Well, if I were in New York, I would come see the film again.
Oh, thank you.
Now, do you know yet, will you submit this to Dances with Films Los Angeles for later in the year?
I haven't gotten that far. It's out to a number of festivals, and yeah, we'll see. I should probably do that
I
now that
think
they know it.
you should. If they're screening it in the festival in New York, there's no reason they should not accept the film for Los
Yeah, screen it in
Angeles.
LA too.
That's just
Sure.
it. Paul, job so well done. I truly am in love with
Thank
this
you.
film, and it does
Oh,
make you
thank
feel like time has stopped as
you.
we're watching this story, Peter's story unfold and Adriana's story unfold. I want to see more films from you, more black and white films.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I'm trying to get something off the ground now. Meaning I'm trying to figure out how to write it. So, well, I'll keep you informed.
Please, please, Paul, this has been so wonderful getting to speak with you today. And
Thank you.
I can't wait to find out from Susan how the screening at Dances with Films goes next week.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paul. And you go have a
Thank you,
wonderful
Debbie.
rest of your day and week as you bite your nails waiting for the film to screen.
I shall. Thank you so much,
Thank
Debbie. Good seeing
you.
you.